always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
I put out a statement about Colombia. Peaceful protest is proper and appropriate. And I've always had four goals in terms of Israel policy. One, radically reduce the presence of Hamas. You can't have peace with Hamas. Free the hostages, get as much humanitarian aid possible as done, and do everything you can to avoid civilian casualties. Last one.
Your message to the protesters.
Last message.
And welcome into the Hump Day edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Harb Show. That is Majority Leader Chuck Schumer at a press conference regarding the protest at Columbia University that has spread to other universities across the country, mostly Ivy League at this time. That is a huge, huge mess, and that'll be one of the big stories that we'll talk about today with my partner Tim Jones, who is in the swamp today, Jefferson City, Missouri. And Tim, as I look here on my computer at the St. Louis Post-Disgrace, I see that the House passed a significant bill today, and we'll be sending that to the governor's desk.
Yes, sir, Chris. The Post-Disgrace is just hating on Missouri Republicans right now, especially the conservatives that moved the defund Planned Parenthood bill all the way through the entire legislative process here against all odds. It's heading to the governor's desk. Chris, this would simply prohibit taxpayer funds, all taxpayer funds, from being utilized on abortion and abortifacients. So, you know, no matter where you are on the abortion issue, shouldn't we all agree? And, you know, Chris, for a long time in this country, there was bipartisan agreement that no matter what our personal opinions might be about abortion itself and whether or not people should have the right to choose that or not, there was bipartisan agreement that taxpayer funds should not be utilized for those procedures because basically taxpayers have no say in that, right? And so they were prohibited on the federal level. The Missouri legislature has decided to prohibit that on the state level as well. Big victory today.
As you'd expect, the Democrats are, of course, are against this, but instead of being sad and lamenting, you read the reports in the Post-Disgrace, they seem to be celebrating a bit. They think this is going to be a victory for them in the long run because of this potential bill that's going to be on the ballot in November that would enshrine abortion rights into the Constitution. Who's right, Tim?
You know, Chris, let the Democrats continue to be the hate on America, death to America, death cult party. If Republicans don't continue to be the party of life, then no party will be, right? And so I'm happy to have that argument, that debate any day. Every Republican should learn how to speak about the fact that the state of Missouri, the state of anywhere, the state should have as its first and foremost priority the propagation and protection of life. You know why? Because if they don't, and if you take that to its logical extreme, then life will cease to exist. The state should protect life. In fact, the drafters of the U.S. Constitution agreed with that. They put that, the words life are mentioned, I think, three times in the beginning of the U.S. Constitution and in the Bill of Rights. And so I think it's perfectly fine to have that debate. You just have to learn about how to talk about it right. And I think you talk about it this way. Do you want to be the party of death or do you want to be the party of life? And again, why should taxpayer funds, why should, Chris, you and I are opposed to abortion. Why should our taxpayer funds be used to fund abortions in the state of Missouri? We should all be able to agree that at least on that item, we should all have unanimous agreement. Taxpayer funds should not be utilized to promote abortions.
And speaking of life and going back to the clip that we brought the show in with, there are protests on many of our major Ivy League colleges. Those protests are directed at the Jewish students. A lot of them are going home. Columbia, we reported yesterday, has gone to virtual learning. All of their classes have been canceled for the week. I know in USC they have canceled their commencement exercises. For next month. Really smart play. You know, we've always talked about, Tim, how the African American vote seems to be slipping from the Democratic Party. It was a vote that Democrats could depend upon. Same with the Jewish vote as well. But I like this move by Republicans to seem to try to capture that sentiment of maybe trying to get Republicans, Jewish people, to vote Republican. Speaker Mike Johnson has gone to the campus of Columbia today to speak to Jewish students. Senators Cotton and another senator, I can't think of his name, they have also visited the campus of Columbia as well. How much, you know, it's kind of late in the game, but this is a serious business when they talk about the survival of Israel and of Jewish people. But how much the inroads do you think Republicans could make because of the situation on these college campuses?
Well, Chris, as you know, most people don't ultimately make up their minds as to how they're going to vote in an election until extremely close to that election. You know, we're a bit of an anomaly, you and I and Joey and all of our listeners, right? We eat, drink, sleep politics 24/7, politics and public policy. Many people, it's a little further from, their minds. And so I think this is a good move because we're still 6 months away from the national election. And I think it's very wise for Republicans aren't known for their voter outreach. It's something that we've complained about often on this program and on this station. I like the fact that Mike Johnson is going into the belly of the beast. He's going in to help the truly oppressed people in this situation. It's Republicans that are standing up for the downtrodden, and that's Jewish Americans in the city of New York. I mean, they're literally being physically attacked and assaulted, something that I think we never thought we'd see in our lifetime, especially here on U.S. soil. The Democratic Party has allowed itself to become ultra radicalized, and we're either going to be a nation of laws where everyone is respected, or we're going to be a segregated society, something that I thought we were trying to move away from while the Democrats continue to try to want to drag us back to that, those days.
You know, these students on these campuses, especially on Columbia, are saying that their First Amendment rights are being infringed because they feel that they should be able to hurl insults and look like Hamas supporters to the world, Tim. That's one issue that they have. You know, as you said, they're not talking about coming to this country and becoming one and assimilating into this, into our country. You know, I had a great comment, I believe, on Wendy Bell's show over the weekend on Newsmax when we were asked about these comments, about these protests on these college campuses.
Just yesterday, the mayor of Kansas City, Quentin Lucas, he has stated that he wants Kansas City to become a sanctuary city, and he is wanting some of these Texas and southern governors to send some of their migrants up to Kansas City. Now, that probably won't happen. Missouri is a very red state. We have a supermajority in the legislature, and our governor is a Republican. So he maybe just be saying that because it knows that it won't happen. But you actually have the mayor of Quentin Lucas saying yesterday he wants illegals to come to Kansas City.
Yeah, I got to put him on my list then. Thank you for that.
And Tim, that was not a a sound effect that Joey put in there. She did a audible gasp when she had not heard that the Honorable Quentin Lucas there in Kansas City is calling for illegal immigrants to invade his city. Like, Kansas City doesn't have enough problems.
Yeah, doesn't he listen to, watch, speak with, chat with his fellow mayors in urban America? I mean, is he not seeing Eric Adams completely hyperventilate over the immigration crisis? It's like, does Quentin Lucas feel bad because he doesn't have his own personal crisis here in the Midwest, like Brandon Johnson does in Chicago and Eric Adams has in New York and other urban mayors have around the country? It's like, does he feel left out, Chris, because he doesn't have his own personal catastrophe? I mean, hello. Wake up and smell the coffee. Where have you been?
Now, Tim, you know, these Ivy League campuses, they're getting all the attention now, but we've seen protests erupt all over the country. We've seen the airport of Chicago there, the road that was shut down. We've seen the Golden Gate Bridge there in San Francisco. So there are instances of hate that are cropping up around the country and, unfortunately, even here in the St. Louis area.
And it was a unanimous vote, Mandy, of the Maplewood City Council here at City Hall, essentially filling a void that was discovered recently in its existing laws by now passing an ordinance that includes stealing as a crime that could be punished as a hate crime under city ordinance. Elected officials say the need to update the ordinance is apparent after a homeowner reported the theft of an Israeli flag. Also, images of a suspect from another incident involve what appears to be a red substance sprayed on an Israeli flag and a banner showing images of Israeli hostages. Maplewood police are still working to identify that suspect.
And Tim, I understand, the sentiment behind this law, but it makes me think if one night on a drunken binge and you're in the Hill neighborhood and you steal an Italian flag, does that make it a hate crime?
I'm torn on this, and I heard the morning show guys discussing this, and they were torn on it as well. And I agreed with the argument that Mike and Gabe and Stell were saying. They're like, look, why can't crimes just be crimes, right? Do we have to like overclassify them and make them quote hate crimes? Shouldn't it, Chris, just be against the law to steal stuff, yeah, right? I mean, I'm glad. Where was that? Was that Webster Groves or Kirkwood?
Maplewood. Maplewood.
So in the People's Republic of Maplewood, for listeners outside of our immediate listening area, Maplewood is an extremely liberalized part of the county of St. Louis, right near the line of St. Louis City. And so I'm surprised that they wanted to protect, people of Jewish descent there, because the left seems to be attacking Jews every day these days. So I'm happy that they want to say that Jewish people shouldn't be unfairly targeted. I'm worried, though, yeah, about calling things hate crimes that just they should just be crimes. Right. It's Moses told us several thousand years ago via God handing down the stone tablets that stealing's bad. You know, so it doesn't matter if you're stealing this, that or the other thing. I worry about the whole hate crime classification, Chris, because then you're I don't know. It's all this intersectionalization again. You know, crimes should just be crimes.
Yeah. Like I said, if you steal an Italian flag in the Hill section of St. Louis, is that a hate crime? If you steal someone's American flag because you are a lefty lunatic who hates this country, does that make it a hate crime? Even though, you know, you're stealing, but it is the First Amendment right in a sense. You are exacting speech, but you can't steal a flag, of course. So I don't know, Maplewood, I hear what you're trying to do. And as Tim said, Maplewood is a very liberal part of the county. And maybe they're just trying to jump on the bandwagon and say, hey, Jewish people, we do support you, and we will pass this questionably new ordinance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just how about we just call it a crime?
I agree with you on that. Tim, we got a huge show today.
Yes,
every Wednesday, as always, we have Zach Smith. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. Speaking of SCOTUS, a lot of big cases went before the justices this week. We'll talk to Zach Smith about that. And we've got a special guest, Tim, at 5:24. We're going to speak with Scott Brown. He's a former U.S. senator from Massachusetts, mm-hmm, and he's chair of the competitiveness. Wow, I'm trying to say that quickly three times. Coalition. We'll talk to him about his new op-ed talking about how Biden is more costly for everyone, but those who are on top. If you remember, Mr. Brown was also a former ambassador in the Trump administration. I think it was to New Zealand. And one other thing that I had forgot, Tim, he was a senator from Massachusetts, of course. Warren beat him out, but he also ran and he was the nominee for the Senate in New Hampshire. So he was trying to do a little Mitt Romney thing there and become elected in two different states. We'll talk to him about competitiveness. One thing, and I'm glad it's kind of ironic that we have him on today, because I wanted to discuss this with you about the Federal Trade Commission's ruling yesterday that said that non-compete clauses are now illegal. You cannot do those anymore. And you know, in the business that we're in, they're almost part of the business, non-compete clauses. I want to ask him about that. And before we go to break, quickly get your thoughts on that ruling yesterday.
I'm torn on this, and I know it's something we can speak with Zach about. I'm torn on this because, Chris, on one hand, non-compete seem to me to be a violation of people's, you know, abilities to go out and secure lucrative employment. It's kind of an infringement on personal rights. On the other hand, you know, if businesses want to enter into a contract with somebody and everybody is, you know, going into it eyes wide open with their own free will, then that's kind of an infringement on the market that way, right? So I'm a little torn on this. I don't think non-compete should be unreasonable, but on the other hand, some business models, some industries rely on them very heavily. I don't like the fact that the government has waved its quote magic wand and just gotten rid of them. That also troubles me. Very curious to hear what Zach thinks about this development.
Exactly. And at 5:07, the speaker's stump speech today.
Chris, we're going to have a little update from Senator Ben Brown. We haven't had the senator on in a long time. He has something moving through the legislature. I know you and our listeners are very interested in. That is the anti-ranked choice voting bill. I thought it was dead for the session. I found out today that some new life is breathed into it. Senator Brown may be working out a deal with House leadership to continue to advance that bill. It's a Senate bill of his that got out of the Senate. It's been sitting in the House, I thought dying a slow death, but no, Senator Brown says hope springs eternal, and with 3 weeks left in the session, he's hopefully can get across the finish line. So we'll talk to him about that and other things that he's working on here at the Capitol with, Chris, barely 3.5 weeks to go.
Boy, we've got a lot to talk about today on the Hump Day edition of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. So when we come back, we will speak with Zach Smith, Senior Legal Fellow of the Heritage Foundation. You're listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
The FCC has now just passed this under the new rule. New non-compete clauses will be banned for lower level employees and for higher level employees, what they're calling senior executives. Existing non-compete clauses will still be allowed. However, for the rest of us who are not senior executives, non-compete clauses that are in effect now will be unenforceable once this measure finally does go through.
4:27 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. We were just talking about that ruling by the FTC yesterday that outlaws non-disclosure, non-compete agreements. Excuse me. Boy, it's Wednesday, so that means we have our legal eagle to talk about this and other issues going on in the world.
Oh, it's all perfectly legal.
Zach Smith, legal fellow with the Heritage Foundation.
You know, I ask you a lot of predictions. Can you predict what the Supreme Court probably will do with this action? Zach, welcome into the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. And I think Tim and I, both our ears perked up yesterday when we heard about this ruling about non-compete clauses because, you know, people in radio and TV, of course, and in other industries have those in their contract. Your thoughts on this? Will this be able to withstand legal muster?
Well, I suspect the lawyers are already fighting to see who can get in the courthouse door first to challenge this rule. And I suspect there may be some success here. Look, this is certainly a sweeping regulation that the FTC has passed. I think there will be challenges under the Administrative Procedures Act, certainly the major questions doctrine that we've heard so much about from the Supreme Court the past few terms will probably come into play here too. Essentially, the idea that if Congress intended to allow administrative agencies to issue rules and regulations of vast economic consequence, Congress has to explicitly say so. It certainly doesn't seem like they explicitly gave the FTC this power in this case. And so I think we're going to see a lot of litigation very shortly over this rule. But I think the breadth of this rule really is sweeping, and the consequences will fully be understood for some time.
Yeah, Zach, I think the the concept of non-competes is something that's been litigated over for decades. When I was a practicing lawyer, we did some work in that area. One of my partners specifically specialized in employment law. And look, Zach, the argument all along with non-competes is you can't just all non-competes are not valid, right? It has to be reasonable in scope, in duration, in geographic location. And so there's been this back and forth on this, and they've definitely been, non-competes have definitely been tailored have been narrowly tailored and structured more and more every decade. But just to sweepingly cast them away, Zach, I'm kind of bothered by that, by a government agency deciding that. I mean, people, whether you're on whatever side you are on non-competes, I think we should all be concerned when an unelected bureaucracy decides what the law is going to be on something that's been heavily contested and litigated for decades.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And look, I think you're hitting on an important point, Tim, because non-competes are largely matters of contract law. You sign a contract with someone as part of your employment not to compete, and contract law is largely governed by state law. Each state's contract law and what non-competes can include and can't include are largely going to be up to that state's law as determined by that state's legislature. Now you have these unelected bureaucrats from Washington, D.C., essentially parachuting in, displacing entire areas of very well-developed contract law in each and every of the 50 states, on top of, you know, whether or not it's good policy or bad policy. And as you mentioned, I think there are some very real reasons why it's bad economic policy in some instances. Some may disagree with us. More fundamentally is, who do we want deciding these questions? Do we want our state elected officials deciding it, or do we want these unaccountable, unelected bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., deciding these issues?
Right. Speaking with Zach Smith, senior legal fellow of the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. Zach, I have to admit to you, you know, I love listening to the SCOTUS 101 podcast every Friday, but I do listen to another legal podcast for my show prep, and that is Professor Alan Dershowitz's podcast, which is called The Dersh Show. And I would suggest that he change the title of that. The Dersh Show just doesn't flow right. Brings up all kind of names, but all kind of images. But regarding the gag order against former President Trump in his New York hush money case, Dershowitz argues that that gag order violates prior restraint within the Constitution. Yeah. Your thoughts on that, sir?
Yeah, look, I think there's a very compelling argument that that may be the case. Trial judges in criminal cases, or civil cases too, but largely this comes into play in criminal cases, you know, judges can impose gag orders prohibiting the criminal defendant or others involved from speaking about certain issues to protect the integrity of the trial. But many judges in the past have expressed their discomfort with gag orders, particularly very expansive ones or ones that last for a long duration, because of the very reason that Alan Dershowitz highlighted. They are essentially a prior restraint. You know, typically in our country, we do not have prior restraints. We don't prohibit someone from speaking. If someone makes a threat, well, they can be punished criminally for that afterwards. If someone defames someone, they can be held civilly accountable for that and paid money damages in appropriate circumstances. But we don't prohibit the speech. Only in a very narrow category of cases do we do that. And in this case, the gag order, as we've talked about before, is particularly problematic because Donald Trump is not an ordinary run-of-the-mill defendant, either a criminal or civil case. Not only is he a former president, but he is a leading president for candidate. And so even though the judge in his New York criminal trial is saying that he imposed the gag order to basically prohibit him from, you know, threatening or intimidating witnesses, keep in mind, these witnesses and others on the left are essentially allowed to smear Donald Trump, to use what those witnesses say about him, and essentially it would substantially inhibit Donald Trump from being able to respond. Now, the New York DA's office is currently asking the judge to fine him $1,000 each for 10 alleged violations of the gag order. So we'll have to wait and see what the judge does with that case. But I do think in this case in particular, the gag order is very problematic.
Zach, speaking of that trial, it seems that a lot of legal experts all across the political and philosophical spectrum are starting to question whether this matter should have been brought in the first place. There was quite the stunning expose published in the New York Times, of all places, and they're now it's like they just woke up, Zach, and realized what was going on, you know, and they're realizing maybe it's because it's such a train wreck they can't avoid it anymore. But the fact that Alvin Bragg has taken two misdemeanors that I don't believe have ever been prosecuted on before in New York's history, that arguably had the statute of limitations already run on them, bootstrapping those onto some vague, ambiguous federal campaign violation of which he doesn't really have any jurisdiction over, and is utilizing all of that in some giant hodgepodge of a pasta pot, throwing it at the wall, hoping something sticks. Zach, it seems that legal experts of all stripes are starting to question this trial. Zach, I'm wondering if maybe they're finally realizing that Alvin Bragg is quite a bit over his skis. What say you?
Well, I would certainly hope so, although if they've been paying attention or willing to admit the truth from the outset, I mean, this has not been hidden. I think since this case has been brought, many legal commentators have said that, legally speaking, this is the weakest of all of the cases that Donald Trump is facing, at least from a legal perspective and the legal theory that's being pursued. And, you know, Tim, we've talked about it before. Alvin Bragg ran for office pledging not to prosecute many violent criminals in New York, and he hasn't prosecuted many violent criminals, and yet he's expending, you know, exponential resources to try to elevate these misdemeanors into felonies, low-level felonies, and to prosecute Donald Trump for them. And essentially the way he's doing that, he's using a weird legal theory where he's trying to say that in order to bootstrap these, Donald Trump committed a federal campaign finance violation, even though the federal Justice Department and the Federal Election Commission declined to pursue those charges against Donald Trump. Alvin Bragg's essentially using them as the predicate basis for his prosecution. And so look, even if Donald Trump is convicted by a jury in Manhattan, and let's face it, there is a chance that could happen given the unfavorable jury pool, the unfavorable judge that Donald Trump is facing in this case. Whenever this issue goes up on appeal to the appellate courts, there is a very real chance that they could reverse on legal grounds due to the nature of the charges.
Speaking with Zach Smith, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast. Zach, I know because of your podcast and what you do for a living, you follow the Supreme Court very closely. There were many cases before the court this week. One of those cases dealt with homelessness. Is being homeless or unhoused going to be a crime in the future in the United States?
Well, it's actually an interesting case, and this is kind of the culmination of three cases that have come out of the very liberal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that covers California, Oregon, Washington, and several other states on the West Coast, where essentially the judges there put forward a very novel theory, Eighth Amendment theory, saying that the fines and fees and potential criminal punishment that some cities on the West Coast were imposing on those who engaged in conduct related to being homeless. Maybe they camped somewhere they weren't supposed to. Maybe they erected a structure they weren't supposed to. The Ninth Circuit said that violates the Eighth Amendment's cruel and unusual punishments clause. And so essentially the city of Grants Pass, Oregon, is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to review that and basically say that, look, either their law does not violate any constitutional provisions, or even if there are constitutional claims that these homeless and indigent individuals can bring, they don't exist under the Eighth Amendment's cruel and unusual clause, because no one at the founding, no one at the time the Constitution was adopted, would have understood that clause to prohibit the types of activities that the local cities are trying to prohibit here. And so it was a very intense oral argument at the court earlier this week. And whatever the court decides could potentially have broad and far-reaching implications for cities across the country as many cities try to grapple with the homelessness crisis that they're currently facing.
Mm-hmm. Zach, I noticed on your Twitter feed a couple days ago, at TZ Smith on Twitter X. Zach is at TZ Smith on Twitter X. Zach, you know, you remarked that the Supreme Court of the United States hit the ground running last week, when it began its last sitting of the term. We're nearing the end of the Supreme Court term. Zach, were any major decisions, any final major arguments brought before the court of significant note? Have any interesting decisions come out? And, remind us what the big potentially bombshell cases are that we'll start hearing from the court over the next 6 to 8 weeks or so.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, of course, the biggest, one of the biggest, if not the biggest oral argument this term, it'll be the court's last oral argument, is going to take place tomorrow morning in the Donald Trump immunity case, which mm-hmm. your listeners may remember. Donald Trump won't be able to attend because the judge in his New York criminal trial is requiring him to be in court every day there. But look, this Trump immunity case before the Supreme Court is going to impact every presidential administration of either party going forward. And so it's one that I think a lot of people are watching very, very closely. John Sauer, who's a former Missouri attorney general, yes. is representing a mm-hmm. solicitor general. Great lawyer is representing Donald Trump in this case. Will Scharf, who's also running for Missouri attorney general, is also on the legal team. There. And so, you know, it'll be one that I think a lot of folks are watching very, very closely. There's also an interesting case this week involving Starbucks and some labor relations issues as well. There's an interesting case where the federal government is essentially challenging Idaho's abortion restrictions under a law known as EMTALA, which essentially requires emergency rooms to provide certain emergency services, regardless of whether an individual can pay or not. There's an interesting a case involving qualified immunity and police officers. So look, there's a lot happening at the court these days. And as you mentioned, Tim, you know, the court is getting into this final stretch where it has to have all of its decisions issued before the end of the term at the end of June. And so the next 6 to 8 weeks are certainly going to come very quickly and will be a very busy time for everyone who watches and cares about what's happening at the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm. Zach, as I mentioned, there are a lot of cases before the court this week. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that there will be a SCOTUS 101 podcast this Friday.
Chris, how did you predict that? you are too good at this. But yes, absolutely, there will be a SCOTUS 101 episode this week. We'll talk about some of these arguments. We'll have our trivia as always. And stay tuned for a fascinating conversation I had with Professor Hadley Arkus about the role that natural law plays in our constitutional order.
All right. Well, that's Zach Smith, Senior Legal Fellow at the Heritage Foundation and co-host of the SCOTUS 101 podcast, one of the podcasts that I listen to get my information on legal news and my show prep. I highly recommend that you go to your app store and download it and listen to it. Zach, thank you so much. Look forward to talking to you next Wednesday, and have a great weekend.
Excellent. Thanks for taking the time.
No
Talk
problem.
To you guys next week.
You know what, Tim? I saw Joey here work his magic here during that that interview and calls. You know what happened?
What happened?
So we're sitting here talking to Zach, of course, and there's this siren that's in the background. You heard it there for a minute. It was starting to get louder and louder and louder. And I was going to joke with Zach a minute about it. Say, Zach, if you need to go, you know, we can let you go if the house is on fire or something. And then I watch out of the corner of my eye, Joey move this button on the console there, and it totally eliminated the siren.
I think it might have been here in Jefferson City, Chris.
Oh, is that you?
I'm happy to it may have been on my end. I thought it was so loud it was here. I'm happy to report, though, the sun is shining in Jefferson City and it's not burning down. So there you go.
Yeah, I thought that was Zach there down there in Florida. Maybe they're having little wildfires down there or something. I don't know. But
you never know.
Joey, can you explain how did that work there? I'm fascinated by that. How'd you do that?
It was totally Tim. And so I just potted him down and listened to the sirens just blare through.
It was Tim, so you could just mm-hmm. silence his
Of course.
I'm also not being arrested. I don't know what the sirens were for, but all is calm once again here in the city of Jefferson.
I was about to really be impressed there for a second, Joy, but never mind.
Never mind.
When we come back, Stephen A. Smith, the ESPN analyst, is apologizing for some comments that he made. We'll talk about that on Chris's Corner. When we come back, you are listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
I'm fully aware that I've been in the news over the last few days, paraded all over social media as well, after comments I made during my appearance on Fox News' Hannity last week. A lot of folks in Black America seem pretty pissed at me right now. Even the NAACP itself. Quite a few folks were put off, if not flat out offended, after my words were interpreted as associating support for Trump from the black community with all the legal issues he's facing. For that, I sincerely apologize.
4:48 on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. That's Stephen A. Smith, the noted ESPN analyst and noted independent. He has admitted that he has voted mostly Democratic in the past, but he has voted for a Republican or two. Apologizing, Tim, for some comments that seem to have been misconstrued by the black community as saying that, that the black community as a, in general, as in whole, in a whole, supports President Trump. The polls, of course, don't cite that out, have never cited that out. But the polls do show that Donald Trump is getting a significant amount of the black vote, especially, for a Republican candidate.
At least he didn't say what Biden said. And that's, you know, if you don't do what Biden does, you ain't black. You know, yeah. I mean, at least he didn't go there. But, you know, I think it's notable. And it's also the reaction. I think the reaction is more notable, right? So when people like Stephen Smith and other more liberal leaning commentators, you know, when they dare to get off of the Democratic reservation and say things that are against the national corporate media talking points. Yeah. Everybody tries to, you know, everybody in the corporate media tries to wrap their knuckles. And it's great that people like him are independent thinkers and they don't have to worry about that type of reaction. I appreciate them speaking out. Him, Bill Maher. You know, we've talked about, you know, a lot of liberal comedians speaking up these days and other commentators, because Chris, these are people that make their living off of speaking their own mind. And right now there's one political party that's trying to, is trying to punish people with censorship. And that would be the Democratic yeah. Party. Whereas the Republican Party says, no, we want more speech. That's the medicine for dealing with speech you don't like.
I hate that he had to apologize, but
I do too.
I'm not mad at the brother. But let's talk more about this in Chris's corner.
Chris.
And if you don't know, now you know.
And now, Chris's Corner.
Look, I'm not mad at Stephen A. Smith for apologizing for speaking his mind. That is something that all of us are guaranteed in the First Amendment in our Constitution. But we know in these politically correct times that if you do not say the right thing, then the right people can cancel you and can ruin your business, ruin your reputation, ruin your career. Stephen A. Smith, of course, makes millions of dollars as an ESPN analyst, and he has children, he has a family, he is in the height, the zenith of his career, and I'm sure he doesn't want to have that ruined. I hate the fact that even still in the 21st century within the African-American community, that those that express opposing views to the majority are not only disagreed with, but disagreed with vehemently and violently in some terms, where people question if you're black, question your blackness, question who you are as a person. And I remember when I first was went to work for Senator Jim Talent, I had the opportunity to go out to MICDS to see Speaker Justice Thomas, Justice Clarence Thomas, speak to some of the family members of some of the students. It was a great honor to be there with the justice, and I had an opportunity to ask him a question that had been burning in my mind since 1991 when he first came onto the scene. And I asked Justice Clarence Thomas plainly, does it affect you? Does it bother you to be hated, despised by so many African-American people? And he said, without missing a beat, no, it doesn't bother me at all. He said, what does bother him is that the way that he has been misconstrued, how the real story does not get out there. And one thing that he said in his talk and in his response to me that really stood out to me, and he said, you know, how come white people can have all the opinions that they want, all the opinions that they want, and all the diverse opinions. But when it comes to black people, that we just have this one or two people that have somehow attained the wisdom from up high, and that whatever they say, that's what we're supposed to follow and adhere to. And he said specifically, is this, he calls that quote unquote the new racism, that but not people being able to share their own experiences, to share their own views. And I've always thought, ever since I first got into politics and thinking of it philosophically, is, you know, how does a race, how does a culture, how do a people advance if you're hearing the same ideas over and over and over, and new ideas that could advance you or improve your situation, those ideas are automatically rejected. I've always seen that there's not going to be much growth in that. And we've seen what happens in certain communities. If there are the same mode of thinking constantly, there just doesn't seem to be any growth in those communities. Other communities, you see where different ideas are brought into the equation, and their communities seem to thrive and to grow. You know, an example of one thing that I've never understood is, you know, if a black person had an interest in classical music or played classical piano, played violin or something, you know, other African Americans or their peers would say that they're selling out or they're trying to be white, and that's a horrible, terrible thing. But when you see Japanese kids or Korean kids or other nationalities kids excelling in sports or excelling in music, which people would consider European or white, that their own people don't consider them sellouts, don't consider them selling out to their culture. Why can't you just have an appreciation of just music and art or whatever, and regardless of who does it, regardless of their race, their religion, their creed or whatever, why can't we just acknowledge God's talents, God's beauty that these people can put on records, put on a art canvas or whatever? That's the thing that just is always, I've never understood, and I've been the type of person that I don't care what you say. If I like particular music, a particular person or whatever, that's who I'm going to like, and you know, you can go pound sand, you're not going to live my life for me. I don't know him of course, but I think Stephen A. Smith shares that same sentiment. But in these hyper-partisan, hyper-politically correct times, when you're making, I think I looked him up, I think he's making $5-7 million a year at ESPN, you don't want the thought police coming in and taking away everything that you have worked so hard to achieve. It's sad that we're in that stage in our society, but as my late friend, Representative State Representative Sherman Park, used to say, it is what it is. And that, Joey, is Chris's Corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris, whatever we may look like on the outside in physical form, you know, we're all different colors, shapes, sizes. It doesn't mean that on the inside we all can't, you know, have different thoughts, exactly. Right? And you know, the outside and the inside world, two different things. You know, physical appearance doesn't determine, you know, what you think, you know, and that's what the Democrats seem to think it should. And there's no justification for it. It's racist in and of itself. It's amazing.
It is. 507 Speaker Stump Speech, we'll be talking about.
We're going to speak with State Senator Ben Brown, who has got one of the biggest bills of the session, the anti-ranked choice voting bill. Chris, has been very controversial over the last few years. It has not gotten across the finish line. I thought it was dead for this year. Apparently, new life has breathed into it. So we'll get an update on that and much more.
And afterwards, we'll speak with former Senator Scott Brown. No relation, I think, to Ben Brown, but we'll ask him about what he is up to. You are listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL. Number one for live and local conservative talk.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.